Hello, it's Tuesday, November 8th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Today we're very honored to have a special guest, Mr. Webster Tarpley. Last Friday we ran a speech of his on Wing TV. The feedback has been phenomenal. Webster is the co-author of a book called George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography with Anton Chaitkin. He's also the author of this recently released book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA. And we also were lucky enough to get to meet him last July down in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Truth Convergence. And of all the people that gave speeches that day, that includes David Ray Griffin, Jim Mars,
Morgan Reynolds,
when Webster hit the stage,
he wowed the crowd.
He wowed them, and they only gave him about 3 minutes or so.
Shame on them.
But it was a phenomenal event to witness, and we just couldn't be more honored to have Mr. Webster Tarpley on Wing TV today. How you doing, Webster?
Thank you very much. I'm fine, and you're very kind.
Oh, well, the feedback we received from your speech last Friday was great, and we're very, very honored to do that. Now, there's a lot to cover today. But the first thing I want to touch upon is that any time something happens in life, we have to go back to the initial moment of inception. So when you're writing your book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, at one point this idea first popped in your mind, and you can go back and say this is when it was born. When we go back to 9/11 and before that, at some point somebody said we're going to demolish the World Trade Center towers. Now, this, of course, was before September 2001. In your opinion, who specifically were the people behind this idea to create this 9/11? Who was it?
It's difficult, obviously, to name names because you can't compulsory testimony. But it's clearly a network of faction inside the CIA, the Pentagon, the Treasury, the important agencies of the U.S. government, the National Security Council, and the White House. That network has been there for 100 years. It's not new. It didn't start with Bush. It was there to blow up the Maine. It was there for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which is an incident which has just been admitted to have been a fraud. So you've got a kind of military security bureaucracy with people who have been entrenched in those bureaucracies for decades. And then you've also got another aspect of it, which is this neocon clique, who are people who are loudmouth propagandists who appear much more in public.
Uh-huh.
They're therefore much more expendable, and I take it that they're also involved in this. So it's a combination of sort of visible public figures who are acting as the spokesman for something that's much more deeply entrenched.
And if you could just round off some, when do you think the first spark of this idea came about?
Very, very hard to say, because they proceed through a series of what you could call pragmatic approximations.
In other words,
they try different terror stunts, they try Oklahoma City, they try other things, they go off bombing Serbia, they blow up the Russian submarine Kursk. I can get down to a couple of specific things, though. Able Danger, this group that's been talked about since August.
Uh-huh.
Congressman Weldon of Pennsylvania brought up Able Danger.
Right.
So if you listen to Weldon, he says one of the tasks of Able Danger was to manipulate Atta and the other 9/11 patsies. Now, as soon as you hear manipulate, you have a public evidence that these are terrorist controllers. They're case officers. I have maintained that Atta is a double agent, and that entire group is full of double agents who tell the dupes and fanatics and other provocateurs what to do. So that begs the question, who are the case officers, who are the terrorist controllers? My finding is that Able Danger, which has been in the news because they say Atta was in the United States early in 2000. That's fine. They should know that because they're the ones who tell him what to do. Well, the ones who order him
exactly
around, give him his marching orders, and tell him what to do. This group is known to have destroyed 2.5 terabytes of their own records and research. That's a quantity of information equal to one quarter of the Library of Congress.
Wow.
So this has been destroyed. And people from this group, this Colonel Schaefer and Navy Captain Philpott, were supposed to appear at the Senate Judiciary Committee, and testify. And they were told by Rumsfeld they're not allowed to do it. The other thing you have to look is, what's this name? Able Danger. If you look at the way these drills go, and by the way, we're very much in the area of code
we're going to.
The biggest worldwide anti-terror drill is called Able Warrior. So if you know how they do these things, they typically have one side plays the defense, the other side plays the attack. So if Able Warrior, let's say, is the defense, who could be the attack? Well, how about Able Danger? So it looks very much like these are the terror controllers.
Webster.
Yeah.
There have been articles floating around by Nico Haupt and others that 9/11 and other state-sponsored acts of terrorism aren't directly the product of the White House or the Pentagon, but in fact go much higher to a super shadow government of defense contractors like SAIC, Raytheon, Boeing, TRW, or people like Dov Zakheim, Bobby Ray Inman, or Frank Carlucci. What are your thoughts?
Those are all on the list of suspects, to be sure. And I have always argued that the command, the actual command post from which this entire thing was directed, could not be Dick Cheney sitting in the basement of the White House with his termagant, nagging wife who won't let him listen to the interagency briefing on a screen because she wants to listen to CNN. And Dick Cheney is sitting there with his four heart attacks and his two pacers or whatever he's got. You can't put the direction of a complicated operation in the hands of a 65 or 70 year old heart patient who might just disappear from this earth at any moment. And so therefore the command structure to a significant degree has got to be in these private military firms, including right. some of the ones you've named that are up there on the list.
Uh-huh.
At the same time though, I want to hold on to the idea that a significant part of the actual implementation, the operations, go through government bureaucracies, go through government computers, military security computers. One example, Global Guardian. Remember that on 9/11, there were approximately 15 drills. As of right now, the count for the morning of 9/11 is 15 drills. Last year, probably 5 or 6 were known, depending on who you were reading. I think I was up to about 7 in my book. One of the biggest and most important is Global Guardian. Remember that I have argued that at the heart of 9/11 is a thermonuclear war threat, the thing that didn't happen, but almost happened, or could have happened, and was therefore built in. Global Guardian is an Armageddon exercise, or better yet, was an Armageddon exercise for all-out total thermonuclear war, submarines, bombers, land-based missiles, vis-a-vis Russia, China, possibly other powers. It was taking place on the morning of 9/11 at the Strategic Air Command, or STRATCOM, base off of Nebraska. The interesting thing about this is a drill that has a penetration attempt built in. In other words, part of the drill, as it was practiced in earlier years, was to have an outside force, a rogue agent, try to use a command and control system to tamper with these operations. What it essentially means is that there was a backdoor or portal through which the invisible government could have reached to actually launch nuclear missiles on that day. They had their own built-in nuclear escalation capability, as I have argued. Why would that be? Remember, at the heart of 9/11, the biggest political event of the day is the Bush-Putin phone call. Most books on 9/11 don't even talk about it. Paul Thompson's timeline doesn't say a word about this. And what does Bush say? Bush says to Putin, "Oh, you see, we've been attacked. We're seizing Afghanistan. We're seizing former Soviet Central Asia. We want bases in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, here, there, and everywhere."
How convenient, huh?
Putin had said, "That's our sphere. Stay out of there or I'll blow your head off. I'll incinerate New York with an H-bomb." Well, at that point, the invisible government would have had to think again and have their own nuclear escalation capability that could not depend on little Bush with his baggage of alcoholism and cocaine abuse and his mental impairment that's so well known.
They have multiple ways,
I would say, of actually getting to nuclear escalation on their own. And here's one way. I think that the revelation of Global Guardian is a confirmation, a validation of why I put a mushroom cloud on the cover of my 9/11 book instead of this the usual stuff of falling buildings. Those are important, but more important was what almost happened. Putin was, I think, correct to say, I'll go into a deception operation, I'll let Bush have what he wants. Every year that goes on now under the neocons, the U.S. will become weaker, Russia will become stronger. That's exactly what's been happening. So Putin's gamble has paid off to that extent. But it could have gone very, very differently. If you'd had a Mother Russia traditionalist there, he would have said, "Stay out of my sphere, and if you don't, I'll go to Red then what will you do?
All right, Webster, I'm going to throw a couple words out here for you. Give me your comments. Global storm, global lightning, and also sudden response 05 down in Charleston.
Thank you. This is where we are right now. This is the current form of Global Guardian is now global storm. And notice, from Global Guardian sounds vaguely reassuring. Global Storm sounds pretty scary because, you know, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, it means more like war. We are now, right now this week, as far as can be known, in the densest environment of nuclear war drills, terror drills, and related exercises. It's denser now than it has been at any other time since the morning of 9/11. And I'm sure in retrospect we can find exactly what day this stuff peaked. Global Storm is what they now call Global Guardian. And this is going on together with, as you say, these other drills. The basic idea is that under the aegis of Vigilant Shield, they're conducting a drill which is a radiological dirty bomb going off on the docks of Mobile, Alabama. In response to that, they go for a nuclear confrontation with North Korea. North Korea launches IRBMs at the U.S., missiles. The U.S. responds. Rumsfeld's favorite anti-ballistic missile system goes into action. And then there's a parallel track, which is the U.S. begins interfering massively in Ukraine. Russia says, stop it. And then we get a nuclear confrontation between the United States and Russia. That's the global storm. So global lightning, global storm is a... If you put them together, you get global nuclear war. And as I say, we're also now into the realm of able warrior. The people at Team 8 Plus, team8plus.org, have been very good in putting up a link that takes you right to the slideshow of STRATCOM, which I have here in front of me on my computer. Mm-hmm. You can see the PowerPoint slideshow of how the U.S. Strategic Command has got these exercises lined up. But I'm looking right now at the period of fiscal 05, which is now last year. The exercises are pretty much distributed evenly through the year. But now that I turn to fiscal 06, where we are now, right, we're in 06 and have been since October 1st, we see positive response, global lightning, global storm, busy night seminars. Nobody's been able to figure those out except to know that they're nuclear, vigilant shield, able warrior, and terminal fury. Don't forget that. Biological and chemical warfare in the Pacific. So you've got a combination of 8 to 10 drills, plus other drills that usually go together with Global Storm. You get up into the range of 12 to 15 drills, so we're practically at a 9/11 level. Maybe I can just mention one other thing.
Sure.
In the framework of this Global Warrior and the anti-terror, so-called, we've got the destabilization of France, and it's massive. This is the payback of the Anglo-Americans. Remember when Villepin stood up to Powell in the United Nations Security Council 2 years ago?
Right.
This is now the revenge of London and New York on the French for what they've done.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in one...
It's a complicated picture, but the main thing you can say is these riots have been deliberately and systematically provoked by the scoundrel Nicolas Sarkozy, who is the interior minister, it means the police minister of France. This is the guy who started to say, I don't want Muslim girls to wear scarves to school, as if this was any of this jerk's business. This is the guy who's been sending police to shoot up mosques with tear gas. This is the guy who goes on the radio and says, oh, these Muslim unemployed, they're a bunch of riffraff. So I think you could actually read the French events within the context of Able Warrior. Somehow, the fact that the U.S. is supposedly mobilizing its, quote, anti-terror, unquote, organisms across the world has a lot to do with these riots that are going on in French cities.
Okay.
The networks involved, just one more point. There are a lot of people in Europe who see neo-fascist gangs controlled by the U.S. and Britain intervening on the ground in France. I remember back in the 80s in Germany, I would observe that neo-Nazis, people who were well-known neo-Nazi agents and thugs, started converting to Islam. And I remember at the time wondering, why are they doing that? Now you see, there was one famous guy called Ahmed Huber, H-U-B-E-R, and he was one of the first of these old Nazis or neo-Nazis to convert to Islam. And it looks like those people have created a network that reaches into mosques and gets people going on the basis of anarchist or neo-Nazi propaganda, gets them out in the streets burning things. So this is, again, false flag, synthetic, state-sponsored terrorism that's striking France.
Okay, Webster, we know that 9/11 is a myth sold by the mainstream media and the White House. What can we do about it? I mean, you've named some names of perps and moles. Nico Hout also has a criminal perp list. If the names of the moles and perps are exposed, will this stop the next planned terrorist attack? Do they have to be prosecuted? And if so, by whom? This is a question from one of our listeners, Jeffrey.
Since that Truth Convergence conference there in July, what I've been working on is the question of setting up a citizen's watch in a real sense. You have to recognize that terrorism comes through these drills, right? 9/11-15 drills, right? 9/11, it's the NRO Chantilly drill that practices crashing planes into buildings. That's the heart of 9/11 right there. Amalgam Virgo, shooting a cruise missile from the deck of a barge or a rogue freighter in the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic and hitting a land target. I think that's what must have happened to the Pentagon. So you've got this fact. London, July 7th of this past summer, you had Atlantic Blue, Top Off 3, Triple Play, plus Peter Power Advisor Associates, all preparing and setting the stage and then carrying out the London explosion. So it's the same pattern again and again. People have got to get wise to the fact that when there's a drill, there's a threat of terrorism. And people have got to start doing this prospectively, looking forward. In other words, identify a drill. If you're in New York City and you're told that there are 4 gas dispensers in Manhattan that are going to test how the gas is blown around among the buildings, you've got to go into action, find out who's behind it, shut it down. Similarly, we just had here in Washington, Granite Shadow and Power Geyser, probably weapons of mass destruction here in Washington with a coup d'etat capability built in. We have to shut it down. The best example is Sudden Response 05 back in the summer. We put this up on a number of websites, and the hypothesis there was a 10-kiloton nuclear bomb was going to go off at Charleston, and that was going to lead to war with Iran, according to Cheney's well-known plan. Well, the people in Charleston began screaming to their local newspaper, and the thing was, apparently, as far as we can see, it was shut down. Mm-hmm. So the point is, you've got to go to these websites, because the amazing thing that most people cannot grasp is that the drill that will become a terror drill is actually legal, announced, sanctioned, and most of the time announced in advance with local press conferences and things like this. So what we need is citizen vigilance. If a drill is coming to your area, be it a war drill, a terror drill, a war game, whatever it is, you have got to look at it and ask yourself, given the scenario of this drill, what could this really turn into? The obvious one is New York. If they're they're squirting out an inert gas, they can put cyanide in there.
Webster, one last really question.
It, very small changes are enough to turn a drill into a tragedy when you've got this rogue network. So I think what citizens have got to do is be aware, if something goes off, Cheney did it. Not some guy in a turban, but Cheney. And be aggressive. Try to shut these things down before they happen.
Can citizens shut them down?
Wait for the drill to come to you. Find out what it is, denounce it, protest it, and all kinds of people can become involved in this because a lot of people just don't want them happening. They don't want to pay for it. They don't want to be terrorized and what have you. So you can actually get some volunteers into the picture. Yeah.
Webster, one last question. When we look at this invisible government, there's always arguments of who's at the top of it. Some people say it's the British Crown, the Jesuits, the Zionists, the Freemasons, old Nazis, intel agencies. Who do you think is at the top of this oligarchy structure, or is it all just a smokescreen cover for the corporate heads or for the international bankers?
I would say it's an oligarchy. It's a polycentric oligarchy. It is a group, if you want to identify it in general, of course, it's finance oligarchs. Not even corporate, but financier oligarchs. Not even some guy working in a corporation that produces something. He's always a puppet of somebody from Wall Street or the City of London. The other thing is this stuff has a history. We just had the 400th anniversary of the Gunpowder Plot, which is pretty much when this faction was born or when it consolidated itself. Remember, on the 5th of November, 1605, Guy Fawkes and company were accused of trying to blow up the Houses of Parliament were Catholic, so the Catholics were skewered literally, and the Jesuits and the Spanish and everybody else. The guy who organized the plot was the Prime Minister, Robert Cecil, Lord Salisbury. He used double agents, he used dupes, he used fanatics, patsies, provocateurs. He set this thing up from the very beginning. It came out of his mind, and he had them running around with barrels full of gunpowder that turned out to be not gunpowder, but decayed corn powder. In other words, an inferior brand of gunpowder that would not even have exploded. So there's a holiday in Britain that's gone on to this day, and the hysteria has still not calmed down after 400 years. That is the typical mode of this faction, because the Cecil faction is indeed the heart of this Anglo-American financier faction. But there's no king. There's no dictator. They don't like that. They always want to have an oligarchy. So it has to be many centers of power. Cartels, oligopoly, that's another way to look at it. Look at the economics of it. You'll see there's no economic czar, but what there is a committee of interests that make up a cartel.
Webster, we're going to be doing a talk show Thursday night, and one of the topics that the host wants to talk about is Watergate. We only have about 2 minutes left. What brought Nixon down? What's the real story?
Here's what I think is most relevant about Watergate right now. If you saw the press conference on the 28th of October in the afternoon when Fitzpatrick, Fitzgerald gave his indictment of Scooter Libby,
right.
On most of the cable TV stations, they had a triple screen with Cheney giving a speech, Bush giving a speech, matched up with the special prosecutor announcing that Libby was going to be indicted. What Bush was saying in that speech was, Iran is an outlaw state, Syria is an outlaw state, my patience with them is exhausted. That is wag the dog. In other words, Bush's option, the neocon option, since the neocons are pretty boys who don't like the idea of going to jail, they are in an apocalyptic Goethe-Dämmerung mood right now. And they would say, well, better the Third World War than we neocons go to jail. Here's what we have to do. In Watergate, Haig and Kissinger, the White House Chief of Staff and the Secretary of State, kept watch on Nixon. When Nixon asked for the nuclear football with the launch codes, they would put him under special surveillance. Later on, Schlesinger, the Secretary of Defense, put out an order to U.S. military commanders saying, if Nixon orders you to take a military action and attack some country, you are to disregard that order until it is confirmed by me, Schlesinger, or else by Kissinger. In other words, somebody has got to keep Bush's finger off the nuclear button in the same way that special measures were taken to prevent Nixon from starting World War III as a way of getting out of Watergate. Remember, in October 1973, Nixon went to all-out nuclear alert during the Middle East War, the Kippur War. Prime Minister Edward Heath of Britain, conservative, at the time said, I think this was pure domestic politics. This was a nuclear alert based on Nixon's Watergate problems, because he was right in the middle of his Saturday night massacre when this happened. So I think the parallel to Watergate is we now have a Watergated White House. What we've got to make sure is that Bush, Cheney don't get their hands on the nuclear button. I think it would probably take a committee of senators to do this, because I think the White House and the administration are so full of scoundrels, I don't know any of them who would ever dare tell them to stop.
Well, my question is, does such a person exist within this administration? Because they're all scoundrels.
Yeah, they're all scoundrels. So how about a group of outsiders, as I say, a group of senators, some congressmen? At least, congressmen and senators should be making speeches about this wag-the-dog danger.
Yeah.
Since it was right on the screen in real time on October 28th.
Yeah, but right? I don't have any faith in the senators either.
Yeah.
Well, then start some demonstrations. Do what you can.
Yeah.
Right? You tell me.
Yeah.
Well, Webster, thanks for being on Wing TV today. He's the author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. It's a phenomenal book and one of the great minds of our generation, Mr. Webster Tarpley.
And it's available on Wing TV website right now. Webster, we love you and we're really proud of what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Keep in touch.
Thank you. Keep up
Bye-bye.
The great work. We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV with Mr. Russ Diamond. We're going to talk about what's going on with the PA legislature and this massive pay raise.
Operation Clean Sweep.
That's right. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you then.